The remote hearing of the Capital Investment Committee for April 14th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Lanchesky, please take the roll.
Representative Fooley.
Lee, present.
Representative Fooley, present. Representative Mary Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Representative Mary Murphy, present. Representative Dean Erdahl.
Erdahl, present.
Representative Dean Erdahl, present. Representative Esther Abadje.
Abadje, present.
Representative Esther Abadje, present. Representative Kayla Berg.
Berg, present.
Representative Kayla Berg, present. Representative Greg Davids.
Davids, present.
Representative Greg Davids, present. Representative Keith Franke.
Franke, present.
Representative Keith Franke, present. Representative Mike Freiberg.
Present.
Representative Mike Freiberg, present. Representative Rick Hansen.
Present.
Representative Rick Hansen, present. Representative John Hewitt.
Present.
Representative John Hewitt, present. Representative Leon Lilly. Representative Leon Lilly. Representative Eric Lucero.
Present.
Representative Eric Lucero, present. Representative Rena Moran. Representative Nels Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Representative Nels Pearson, present. Representative Donald Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Representative Donald Raleigh, present. Representative Jordan Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Representative Jordan Rasmussen, present. Representative Liz Ryer.
Ryer, present.
Representative Liz Ryer, present. Representative Nolan West.
West, present.
Representative Nolan West, present. Representative Jay Zhang.
Here.
Representative Jay Zhang, present. Representative Leon Lilly. Representative Rena Moran. Members, with conclusion of the roll call, please mute your devices. A quorum is.
Thank you, Mr. Lanchesky. A quorum is present. Representative Murphy, do I have a motion to approve the minutes for April 12th?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I move approval of the minutes for April 12th as printed.
Representative Murphy, move approval of the minutes for April 12th. Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for April 12th are approved. Members, today we will hear public testimony on the DE amendment to House File 337, the 2021 Omnibus Bonding Bill. We have a long list of testifiers with each allotted a couple of minutes, around 2 minutes. So there, just wanted to let you know that there were some written testimony that has been posted on the website and also sent to you. And so with that, the first testifier is Deed Commissioner Grove. Welcome to the committee. Commissioner, please stand up for yourself and proceed. Ms. Nash,
Chair, I may have to. Yeah, sorry, Chair. Let me just double check back. You're so quick. Let me find Commissioner Grove. Apologies.
Okay. No worries. Why don't we go with Director Jasky from Bowser? Director, perfect. Please identify yourself and proceed. Is Director Jasky on?
I did see Angie Kadonka-Backer.
Yes, Brian Jasky is here, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for the opportunity to talk to you about the recommendation from the governor in the bill that you are about to consider. And also, thank you, Representative Hansen, for introducing a bill that was very similar to this early in the year. We are pleased to, you know, talk about this item, which is a $14.307 million appropriation for the acquisition of conservation easements. Permanent conservation easements. This represents the final installment of the state's contribution to a state federal agreement known as the Minnesota CREP or Conservation Reserve Enhancement Program. that will leverage nearly twice as much of the funding that will come from the federal government to do this landscape restoration work, primarily wetland restorations, but also practices that would protect groundwater and riparian areas in a very large area, 54 counties actually in southern and western Minnesota. Mr. Chairman and members, this represents a great opportunity to again use those federal dollars along with these state funds to accomplish permanent water quality and habitat improvements, and be happy to take any questions from you or any of the other members. Thank you. For the record, Mr. Chair, John Jasky, Executive Director of Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Thank you, Director Jasky. Next up, we have Mr. Horsfield.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak with you today. My name is Steve Horsfield. I am the Executive Director at Simpson Housing Services. Simpson has been operating shelter for 40 years, serving more than 500 guests annually and thousands of former guests who have now transitioned into permanent housing. All of this work has been done in facilities that have been donated for our use from the private community. Several years ago, when Simpson United Methodist Church began making plans to close, they elected to preserve their legacy of social justice and community engagement by donating their building to Simpson Housing Services. Our board elected to accept this gift on the premise that we would build a new facility on the site, and that inside of this new building, we could improve upon the shelter experience for our guests with improved dignity and housing placement outcomes. At that time, we began a process of researching national best practices for shelter. We engaged our guests and community partners in focus groups. This work resulted in preliminary designs for a new shelter facility and programming. Our design was further developed as a result of operating the Navigation Center in the winter of 2018 and 2019, where we were able to demonstrate the effectiveness of 24-hour shelter operations that are low barrier in terms of easy access with a rich array of services on site. With expanded accommodations for guests and healthcare services on site, we've also come to believe that this model would be ideal for operating during a pandemic. Through this process, we have worked closely with the local neighborhood organization and with our neighbors to ensure that we are creating space that is valued and supported locally. We're approaching this work in a way that is intended to be easily replicated. We believe that moderate-sized facilities of the type that we're proposing are the right solution for many communities, and that this model will be well-positioned to be replicated as a best practice model around the state. We all know that housing instability and homelessness disproportionately impact Black, Indigenous, and people of color in our communities. To that end, we see this work as instrumental towards building equity in housing. Our project also includes, in addition to the shelter, our project also includes 42 units of supportive housing, which go to fill a critical niche in our housing continuum. The housing component of our project has received over $2 million in financial support from Hennepin County and the City of Minneapolis, and has been well received thus far by Minnesota Housing Finance Agency. With our private campaign, the requested $10 million in bonding is being matched dollar for dollar by the private community. With our design work largely complete and the progress we have made in securing private funding, we're excited to be able to get to work on the project with financial support from the state. Thank you, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Horsfield. Commissioner Grove, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Shirley. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Steve Grove. I'm the Commissioner of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Thank you for inviting me here today to testify on the Capital Investment Omnibus Bill. It's a challenging endeavor to put these bills together, and we're grateful to the chair and committee's work in putting together a really thoughtful package. Of most note to our agency is the work in this package focused on economic recovery, and in particular, economic recovery related to the damage that was suffered during the civil unrest that took place in Minneapolis and St. Paul last year. Not only is rebuilding these corridors important to the businesses that were hit in these districts, which are disproportionately owned by BIPOC small business owners, but it's also critical to the future of our economy in this region. Dense, thriving business sectors in urban areas are strong contributors to our state's tax base. That's going to help the whole state grow and recover coming out of COVID-19. And then there's this. Every day, my team and I speak to businesses across the country thinking about relocating to Minnesota and making sure that this is the kind of state that projects possibility and the opportunity to thrive is essential. And a big part of that argument that we make every single day to prospective companies wanting to move here is that we have a thriving urban core and not one where major corridors of buildings have been destroyed and there's infrastructure issues on undeveloped property. So this is an issue that affects our entire state, our ability to build jobs and grow jobs here. We want to make sure that these bonds and this package rebuilds neighborhoods the right way. And that means working with local developers, looking with cities to make sure that the rebuilding reflects the corridors and the people who live there. The governor included $150 million in investment in redevelopment appropriation of bonds. In our package, this is going to be focused, again, on small businesses and other private property in these corridors. And this bill from Chair Lee and the committee includes $300 million for those efforts. So just recognizing how essential rebuilding is in this at this moment. The financing provided by these bonds will serve a public purpose by rebuilding the tax base and redeveloping the areas damaged by the civil unrest. The resources made available by these bonds will strengthen rebuilding efforts and help ensure a robust and equitable economic recovery in the Twin Cities. Both of those cities, of course, huge economic drivers for our state, and it will help those cities rebuild their tax bases as well. They will also ensure that redevelopment is funded and support enterprise development and wealth creation for people that have been adversely affected by the same longstanding structural racial discrimination and poverty that has existed in our communities for far too long. And we want to make sure that we prevent the displacement of small businesses owned by people of color and Indigenous Minnesotans through this package. It's encouraging to see the House and the governor are aligned on this effort. More broadly, the governor is committed to ensuring that BIPOC communities are supported with these AP bonds. So there's some very strong language in this bill, very clear language that ensures that this money will focus on small businesses and economic opportunities that are there for long-term residents, that will require the cities to solicit community input and prioritize minority-owned or operated businesses. It will prioritize and make it a goal to retain and rebuild impacted businesses and infrastructure in these areas. And there'll be regular quarterly reports for accountability. We need to make sure that every last taxpayer dollar that goes to rebuilding these cities is spent wisely and with an equity lens in mind. So this is something that we have to get right. There's just simply no other choice than to rebuild and rebuild even better. We have to have a bold vision right now for economic recovery. We're reminded even this week of the deep tensions that lie in our region and how rebuilding and renewal are going to be a critical part of reimagining our system so that we have an economy that succeeds for everyone. And to that end, I want to thank the chair for his thoughtful bill, thank the committee as well, and share our support for this package. Thanks, Mr. Chair. That concludes my remarks, and I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Commissioner Grove. And just a reminder for everyone else, I understand that you hopped on a little bit late just to keep your remarks within 2 to 3 minutes. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Commissioner Grove. A question came up last week in this committee, and you were sent a letter, I think, in regards to that. And I just read your answer and I guess didn't really feel that, at least I got the answer that I was looking for. And that is, can federal dollars, this money that is coming through the various legislation passed in Congress, be used as cash for capital investment in bonding?
Commissioner Grove, I know that Commissioner Showalter is on here too, who is slated to go next. And so if you can't
answer that too,
we can have Commissioner Showalter.
Yeah, I think Commissioner Showalter is probably better positioned to answer questions on those bonding dollars from federal government.
Thank you, Commissioner Grove. Commissioner Showalter, please identify yourself and proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you, Chair Lee, members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. For the record, my name is Jim Showalter, Commissioner of Minnesota Management and Budget, and I want to express support for the House Capital Budget Omnibus Bill, House File 337. As Commissioner Grove and other leaders of agencies are testifying about key projects, I just want to make some comments over the overall package, and then we can address any questions. A budget is a statement of values, and we share the values included in the House Capital Budget. First value is investing in our communities. We're pleased to see the significant investment in the redevelopment appropriation bonds, which will rebuild areas of Minneapolis and St. Paul impacted by civil unrest, with a focus on preventing displacement of local businesses and supporting minority-owned businesses. We also appreciate the investment in housing infrastructure bonds, which preserve and build new housing across the state. In addition, expanding eligible uses to multifamily rental housing will help households whose income does not match the cost of available housing. Another key investment is for equity projects, community-based organizations that are led and serve people of color and Indigenous people, as these organizations have traditionally not had access to capital investments through the state. Now, the second value is maintaining existing assets, and this bill makes needed investments in asset preservation, which addressed the state's significant deferred maintenance backlog. We also appreciate the inclusion of the Capitol Complex security upgrades, as recommended by the 2021 Advisory Committee on the Capitol Area Security Report. Third, this bill ensures federal funds come to Minnesota. Several projects tied to federal dollars that could be lost if the state match is not appropriated this session, including the MnDOT Passenger Rail Program, the Bowser Conservation Reserve Enforcement Enhancement Program, as we just heard earlier, and the Veterans Affairs Redwood Falls Cemetery. Now, thank you for including these projects. We're all part of the governor's capital budget recommendations. That concludes my testimony, and happy to go to questions about the American Rescue Plan or other things. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Erdahl, do you want to repeat your questions for Commissioner Showalter? You're on mute right now.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Chair Lee and Commissioner Showalter. And maybe you heard my question. Can federal dollars be used directly for bonding projects? Maybe I'll get more specific. I noticed that there's money in there for infrastructure for water, for wastewater and sewers. So could we use this, for example, to fund PFA?
Commissioner Showalter.
Mr. Chair, Representative, a great question. And it is one that we're trying to get information on. You know, although the ARPA has been enacted into federal law, the guidance, the directions from federal agencies has not been received. And so I know the chair has asked a similar question, and we are waiting that kind of information. I don't have anything at this point to articulate what we can use or what are those agency strictures for the flexible funds or for the capital projects that were also included in the ARPA. So there's a lot of questions and there's a lot of opportunity. And at this point, Minnesota, like other states, is waiting to understand what kind of flexibility we may have for directing those funds. One positive aspect of this is that we have a longer runway than we did for the CARES Act, where we had basically that calendar year. And we anticipate being able to use these funds over the next 3 years.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Chair Lee and Commissioner Showalter. And as soon as you get a definitive answer, we would appreciate knowing it. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Commissioner Showalter. Next up, we have Commissioner Schroman. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Schroman. I'm the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. And I'd like to thank you, Chair Lee, and all the members of your committee for your work this session to put together this bonding bill. We appreciate the opportunity to be here today to testify. Given the value that we're seeing Minnesotans place on our natural resources and outdoor spaces, we believe now is a critical time to reinvest. It is a time to make sure we can continue to offer high quality outdoor opportunities and also make our state-owned facilities safe places for employees to work. And that's what your bill does. Since I only have 2 minutes, I'm not going to go into all of the detail about the good work DNR will be able to do with this bonding bill, but I'll just highlight a couple things in the areas of natural resource asset preservation. And I will just remind the committee that the DNR manages more than 2,900 buildings, of which nearly 1 in 3 is over 50 years old. 1 in 4 is an unacceptable or poor condition, and only 1 in 4 meet today's design and building standards. The funding in this bill will help DNR ensure that park facilities are welcoming and accessible to the public, that campgrounds have functioning water and wastewater system, and that our roads, trails, and bridges are maintained for forest management, recreation, and other activities. In the area of reforestation and state forest nursery investment, I'll say that the reforestation is really the foundation of sustainable forest management. Healthy forests provide timber and jobs for the forest product industry. They also provide recreation opportunities and habitat for wildlife, clean air and water, and carbon sequestration for climate change mitigation. These investments in the state forest nursery will help modernize a facility that is critical to providing conservation grade seedlings and seed from Minnesota for reforestation and to combat climate change. And finally, in the betterment of buildings category, as I think we can all agree, DNR buildings must be safe. They have to be ADA accessible, energy efficient, and meet our current operational needs. The House recommendation of $7 million in this category will enable the DNR to make significant improvements and renovations to buildings to meet these needs of Minnesota into the future. So thank you again for your time today. That concludes my testimony. I'd be happy to stand for any questions, and we can also follow up with a letter that more details the work that we would do with this bill.
Thank you, Commissioner Stroman. Next up, we have Brian Yolitz. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee and committee, I'm Brian Yolitz, the Associate Vice Chancellor for Facilities for Minnesota State. On behalf of the Minnesota State College University's Board of Trustees, Chancellor Devinder Malhotra, our 37 colleges and universities, and the 333,000 students we serve, thank you for including $32 million in HEPR funding for asset preservation of our campus facilities in this bill. HEPR funding is critical to supporting our students and keeping our campuses warm, safe, and dry, and operating efficiently. Minnesota State campus buildings represent the doorway to higher education and a better life for so many Minnesotans. The funding provided in House File 377 will immediately be put to use, starting the design and construction of nearly two dozen projects at campuses across the state. It's important to recall that Minnesota State College University campuses have a backlog of maintenance of over $1 billion associated with the 22 million square feet of academic space that the state owns and we operate day in day. In addition, we forecast another $1.2 billion in facilities and components that will come due in the next 10 years. Our campuses are in dire need of strong, sustained, and predictable asset preservation funding through HEPR to address the total 10-year renewal need of nearly $2.4 billion. We look forward to working with you in the coming weeks on bringing the asset preservation funding to reality this session, and we look forward to hosting the committee on campus visits this fall in preparation for the 2022 legislative session. Chair Lee and committee, again, we are grateful for your support of the asset preservation needs of Minnesota State campus buildings, our top priority of our college university leaders. Happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair and committee, that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Yolitz, for that testimony. And next up, we have Diane Larson. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Diane Larson, and I'm the executive director of both the Itasca County and Grand Rapids Housing and Redevelopment Authorities. I am here today to testify on behalf of Minnesota NARO and its 140 agency members who own and operate over 20,000 units of publicly owned housing and administer over 30,000 housing choice vouchers. In addition, HRAs work with developers on a regular basis to preserve and develop affordable housing throughout our state using housing infrastructure bonds. As partners at the local level, housing authorities see the importance of these bonds for housing investment so that our communities have the resources to address critical housing needs. Minnesota NARO and its members strongly support the bonds for housing investments included in the House Omnibus Bonding Bill before you today. In particular, the GO bonds for the rehabilitation of publicly owned housing will help us address unmet capital needs of this public asset valued at over $2 billion statewide. GO bonds to rehab publicly owned housing, commonly referred to as POP, are used for major capital improvements to address health, safety, and energy efficiency, such as new roofs, boilers, or elevators. It is noteworthy that based on the POP awards to date, much of this funding goes to housing located in Greater Minnesota. For many HRAs like my own, the annual federal capital funds are insufficient to address major capital projects. With a POP loan, however, my housing authority was able to complete needed major rehabilitation projects in a shorter amount of time while leveraging capital fund dollars from the federal government. Thus, my agency saw both cost savings and time savings, which ultimately benefits my residents who represent some of the most vulnerable and lowest income households in my community. In closing, Minnesota NARO appreciates that the legislature sees the value of investing in bonds for housing. We urge you to support these housing investments today so we can build more affordable housing in the future. Thank you for this opportunity to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Larson. Next up, we have Holly Henning. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Bonjour, everyone, Chair Lee, members of the committee. My name is Holly Henning, and I'm the residential director for Inda Young Center. And I'm here today in support of House File 337 on behalf of more than 270 members of the Homes for All Coalition. Inda Young Center means our home in the Anishinaabe Mohan language, which is the Ojibwe language. We have an emergency shelter for runaway and homeless Native youth. And a Young Center is a cornerstone for community healing, recognizing that American Indian culture, you can't grow as a person until you have honor, dignity, and respect for both yourself and everything around you. Each year at Inda Young Center, we provide services to over 1,000 youth and families using traditional beliefs as a starting point for personal and community growth. In addition to providing emergency shelter, transition, and transitional housing, in November of 2019, Inda Young Center opened the doors to a new permanent supportive housing project for Native youth ages 18 to 24 experiencing homelessness located in St. Paul, Minnesota. And in the face of the pandemic and uncivil arrests, we were able to house 42 young adults with on-site services. Minnoshi and a Young Center was developed in partnerships with PPL and were made possible because of the housing infrastructure bonding investments. And so this bonding bill would provide significant investments to support all types of affordable housing across the continuum from shelter capital, housing, rehabilitation, preservation of naturally occurring affordable housing, and the development of new affordable housing. The housing needs for every community are different, which is why the coalition appreciates your support for new eligible uses, including the affordable housing with the prioritization of the 30% AMI and below, both with and without supportive services. I would also like to take a brief moment to speak in favor of the shelter capital that would provide an opportunity for Inda Young Center to make critical repairs and necessary safety upgrades to our emergency shelter and other shelters across Minnesota that serve our most vulnerable youth. We have a beautiful new permanent supportive housing complex, but yet we are unable to secure funds for our rapidly deteriorating and crumbling exterior chimney and subpar bathrooms that are in disrepair and creates dire safety concerns and puts our licensure at risk. A place that
Ms. Henning, can I have you wrap up, please?
Yep. I would just like to take a second to thank the committee for all you've done in the recent years in supporting housing investments, because I have seen the firsthand positive impacts of the lives that these dollars touch. So Chumi Gwetch, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Next up, we have Rana Otson. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Hello, Chair Lee and members of the committee. I'm Rhonda Otteson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, and we are a statewide advocacy organization of over 100 members. Together, we work to generate policies, community support, and local resources for housing and services to end homelessness in Minnesota. MCH is also a partner of the Homes for All Coalition, joining over 270 endorsing organizations from across the state that work together to advocate for solutions that span the housing continuum from homelessness all the way to homeownership. So I want to thank you and the committee for your robust investments in housing and shelter, specifically the investment of $150 million in bonds to create homes, $100 million in the general obligation bonds for public housing rehab, and the $50 million in bonds for shelter. An investment of $50 million in the development, acquisition, and rehabilitation of shelter beds across the state will create safe indoor spaces for individuals and families sleeping outside or staying in unsafe conditions. Even before the pandemic, Minnesota was facing a housing and homelessness crisis. Investing into shelter is an equity issue. Black, Indigenous, and people of color experience homelessness at much higher rates than the white population. Safe and dignified shelter is a starting point to building long-term stability that should be available to everyone experiencing homelessness. This investment will also allow for the development of culturally appropriate and low-barrier shelters, which are essential to advancing housing stability in communities of color and across the state. Minnesota currently lacks over 50,000 homes to meet the needs across the state. And for people experiencing homelessness, we need between 6,000 and 15,000 beds. We need to increase that shelter capacity to meet this goal while simultaneously creating housing. This proposed investment will make significant steps toward meeting that goal. We know that shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness. Until we have enough quality homes for children, adults, and seniors across our state, shelter is a critical piece of the housing continuum. Every child, every adult, every senior should have the safety and shelter they need as they work towards a permanent home. Thank you, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Ms. Addison. Next up, we have Alan Arthur. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is Alan Arthur, and I'm the president and CEO of AON, a nonprofit affordable housing provider in the state of Minnesota. And I'm sorry, my camera is not working for some reason. Hope you can hear me. I appreciate your support for the bonding bill, and especially for your support for the naturally occurring affordable housing being included in that bill. We are facing, as many people have said, a housing crisis of immense proportions, greater than anybody on this call has ever seen and ever will see. Many of us are talking in this community about doing something about it. This is that doing that's extremely important for the families and individuals across our state. NOAA housing, preserving NOAA housing is extremely important because it's half the cost and twice the speed of creating new affordable housing. We need to do both, but we need to be more aggressive in the preserving existing affordable housing at half the cost and twice the speed to provide housing that's affordable and decent for people in our community. Thank you for your support and your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Arthur. Next up, we have Margaret Donahoe. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. I'm Margaret Donahoe, Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance, representing local governments, businesses, labor, the transportation industry, transit systems, and other modes all across the state. On behalf of the members of the Alliance, I want to thank you and urge your continued support for the transportation funding in House File 337. The $10 million for the Local Road Improvement Program is very much needed. The last solicitation for this program, with the funding that was provided in the 2020 bonding bill, generated requests for 421 local road projects, needing $342 million in state bond funds. With only $75 million available, most of these projects will not receive funding. But this proposed $10 million in additional funding would be used right away to whittle down that list of needed projects. The $30 million for the local bridge program is badly needed. The three-year need from 2021 through 2023 is for $160 million in state bond funds that would leverage federal funds, local funds, other state aid, for over $331 million worth of bridge repair on 400 deficient bridges all across the state. The $25.5 million for passenger rail we support to continue development of that between the Twin Cities and Chicago and between the Twin Cities and Duluth. We also support the $4 million in port development assistance for the ports of Duluth, St. Paul, Winona, and Red Wing, the $8 million for safe routes to school, and the $40 million for the E-Line bus rapid transit line is very important to continue the development of the BRT network in the Twin Cities region. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify and support these critical investments that will help make Minnesota's transportation system safer and more effective, supporting the state's economic recovery from the pandemic with investments that will support businesses and residents well into the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. Next up, we have Mr. Biskey. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee and members. My name is Rich Biskey. I'm the Freshwater Program Director for the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota. The Nature Conservancy is an international organization with a mission to conserve the lands and waters on which all life depends. We work to achieve this mission locally by protecting lands and waters in Minnesota for the benefit of people and nature. I'm here today to thank you for including several key investments in your bonding bill to invest in nature as infrastructure that will help protect and improve water quality, sequester carbon in the face of climate change. First, I'd like to thank you for the $5 million recommendation for reforestation and $3.6 million for improvements to the DNR's tree nursery. The reforestation needs in the state are very significant. Ongoing investment in reforestation will help the state keep up with replanting efforts after harvest, but go further to support reforestation in areas that were historically forested, now deforested, and increase stocking where trees are not currently growing or not growing to their full potential. Planting these areas as critical requires site preparation and maintenance for years after the planting to ensure survival and to see their full benefits for both climate, habitat, and water quality. This will support that pre and post planting needs and will contribute to Minnesota's goal of capturing more carbon while helping our forests be resilient in the face of climate change for years to come, and provide the many ecosystem services like flood control, water quality, soil health, and wildlife habitat. Funding to support the nursery will help help it operate at full capacity, increasing tree planting for both state, county, and private forests. Reforestation is essential climate action necessary to ensure the health of our forests, and the investments directed toward nursery upgrades will result in increased seed production and improved efficiency that's really needed to ensure seedling success across the state at the scale necessary to meet our planting needs in years to come as we scale up reforestation as a needed climate action. And the state tree nursery is an important source for genetically appropriate seedling to be resilient for Minnesota forests, ensuring survival and planting success. I'd also like to thank you for the $4 million investment in the Scientific and Natural Area, or SNA program. SNAs protect lands of outstanding ecological features that are vital for maintaining the genetic diversity and preventing the loss of important plant, game, and non-game species in Minnesota, plant communities, and natural features. As wildlife and plant species shift northward in the state, natural communities and features represented by SNAs will help support continued survival of threatened species and serve as hubs of diversity while providing resilient habitat for representative species in the face of climate change.
Mr. Biskey, can I have you wrap up, please?
Thank you for the prioritizing these natural infrastructure and clean water initiatives. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, we have Mr. Charlie Vanderart. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Chair Lee and members of the committee. Charlie Vanderarty for Metro Cities, which represents the collective interests of cities across the metropolitan region at the legislature. We thank the committee for including several city priorities in the bill. Metro Cities supports the inclusion of funds for inflow and infiltration mitigation for metropolitan cities. Funding to address excess local inflow and infiltration is a key priority for the association, and funding goes a long ways in assisting with necessary improvements to local sewer infrastructure to mitigate costs that are more cost effective than building additional regional level infrastructure to manage INI. Metro Cities also supports state GO and appropriation bonds in the bill that will address a range of locally identified housing needs in the metropolitan region. Cities in the metro apply for state resources every year. However, the demand far outstrips available funding. State support is essential to meeting the housing needs of Minnesotans who struggle to pay for their homes. Finally, Mr. Chair, Metro Cities appreciates and supports the inclusion of local funding for local roads and local bridges included in the bill that provide important resources for governments in the preservation and maintenance of local transportation infrastructure. Thank you for the opportunity to comment today.
Thank you. Next up, we have Commissioner Hickey. Please proceed.
Chair Lee, committee members, Larry Hickey, Commissioner of Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. On behalf of the 312,000 veterans in Minnesota, I'm here to thank you for including the $4.5 million for the Redwood County Cemetery. As Commissioner Showalter said before, I'm one of the projects that actually is going to receive federal funding in the form of a grant from the National Cemetery Association, which is part of the federal VA. As of today, we've secured $7.5 million towards cemetery in Redwood County. I want to also report to you that we're in the process of transferring land from the county to the state for this project, and design is nearing completion at this time. So we're in a good position to move forward. There are some of the items that are not included as part of the scope for the NCA at the federal level that have been previously funded by the state, and we're asking that again in the $4.5 million that we're requesting to complete fully complete the cemetery. I would like to report of interest. This will be the first cemetery that will meet the SB 2030, Sustainable Buildings 2030 requirements. And we will be including that as part of that package, which is, I think, a good thing for a cemetery to meet environmental standards. It's on a great location. I've been there. It's a wonderful place and very quiet. And I also want to thank the legislature for appropriating the money back in 2017 to improve Nobles Avenue, which is actually the entrance. It's a county road. That money was appropriated for Redwood County to be able to improve that road, and that's been completed. So we're in a good position here. Just need $4.5 million to put the project together and to move it forward. This project will support about a minimum of 45,000 veterans that are within 2 hours of this cemetery. And they'd be very appreciative. This will really complete the four state cemeteries within the state, which will allow a great flexibility for veterans throughout Minnesota. And with that, Mr. Chair, I thank you for including this in your bill.
Thank you, Commissioner Herke, for coming by and providing that update. So next up, we have Commissioner Snell.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for this opportunity. I'm going to be very brief. As I've explained before, the DOC has about over $600 million in deferred maintenance. The proposed dollars in this appropriation would help us address fire prevention issues in Faribault, mechanical and electrical investments in Lionel Lakes, ADA upgrades at Moose Lake, security system upgrades in Oak Park Heights, roof replacements at Stillwater. And I also want to just say I appreciate the technical amendment to the FY21 to the appropriation in the previous bonding bill related to the St. Cloud Living Units. We want to get that project going. I just want to say thank you and how appreciative we are of being able to move forward on these critical investments.
Thank you, Commissioner Snow. Next up, we have Commissioner Ho.
Chairman Lee, members of the committee, my name is Jennifer Ho, and I'm the Commissioner at Minnesota Housing. Thanks for the opportunity to testify today. You know, we need more housing, a lot more housing, and this bill represents a significant investment in housing with $150 million in housing infrastructure bonds and $100 million in public housing rehabilitation. Housing infrastructure bonds, as you all know, are a critical tool to building housing that's affordable to those that make the least, including seniors and individuals and families experiencing homelessness. Besides senior housing and permanent supportive housing, housing infrastructure bonds are also used for preservation of federally assisted rental housing, homeownership development, and manufactured home park infrastructure. This investment will help me say yes to more projects that will be applying for resources later this year. Since 2012, $61.5 million has been allocated to the state for public housing rehabilitation. So $100 million this year represents a significant investment in this critical type of housing. We know these buildings are old and need significant rehabilitation. We're working as we speak to deploy the $16 million that was provided last October. As you'll hear from Deputy Commissioner Johnson from the Department of Human Services, we have been in dialogue and we believe that the $50 million in shelter resources are better positioned at DHS given their expertise and their funding of shelter operations. One concern that I have is that the timing of the agency issuing appropriation bonds for shelter might not align with the critical need for resources. Minnesota Housing can only issue housing infrastructure bonds after Minnesota Management and Budget issues general obligation bonds each fall. So with that in mind, we likely would not have resources to finance shelter until the fall of 2022. Additionally, Minnesota Housing staff does not have shelter expertise, so we would need to address that. We did send over a letter, but it was kind of a just-in-time letter, Mr. Chair. Apologies for that, so I'm not sure it's posted yet. That addresses some of the technical elements of this. Again, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate that the House is going big on housing infrastructure. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Ho. Next up, we have Deputy Commissioner Johnson. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you. My name is Chuck Johnson. I serve as Deputy Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Human Services. Thanks for your support. The Minnesota Sex Offender Phase 2 project. This is the community preparation services on our St. Peter campus. In recent years, court order clients transferred to community preparation services increased significantly. However, we lacked the space to serve all the clients. Currently, we have 88 clients who are being treated at CPS. Another 48 have court orders to move to CPS. We don't have the space. Those individuals are not being given the opportunity to progress in treatment that they deserve. We have asked for funds for this project since 2016 and 2020. We received $1.8 million and have done a little bit of work using asset preservation money to build 20 additional beds. That's in process now. It will be done by the end of the year. While this bill appropriates $8.85 million, does not fully meet the governor's recommended $17.8 million request. We request, in fact, that you do provide the full $17.8 million for this project. We need that to complete 30 additional beds, as well as the programming space. Without the additional funding, we're concerned it will be subject to potential federal and state lawsuits or other court orders and not being able to move clients through the program in a timely way. The money provided will allow us to create the 30 beds, not the additional programming space that we need for the project. I'd like to comment on two other issues. The $10 million for early learning facilities, we appreciate that I was providing this $10 million in general obligation bonds. These are grants that help local entities to construct new or to renovate substandard early childhood facilities. Access to affordable childcare is a significant challenge throughout the state, particularly in Greater Minnesota. Local providers can create more equitable access to age-appropriate and high-quality care by using these dollars. Since 1992, this program has had $23 million appropriated, and we've done 75 projects, 57 in Greater Minnesota and 18 in the metro area. So these funds would allow us to continue that work. Then finally, as Commissioner Ho said, we appreciate the $50 million that's being provided for homeless shelter facilities in the bill. Really go a long way toward helping the homeless problem here in Minnesota. As Commissioner Ho said, we are probably the better positioned agency to administer this program and to manage the grants. We have experience in this kind of work, and we partner with Minnesota Housing really on the shelter side of our housing work. If asked, we can manage these grants. We would need additional resources to do that. We request that the committee provide us with funding for two FTEs to help administer the shelter housing program. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner Johnson. Next up, we have Derek James. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman Lee. I'm Derek James, Senior Manager of Government Affairs for Amtrak. I come to you today in support of proposals to have Minnesota join the U.S. Federal Railroad Administration, Wisconsin Department of Transportation, and Amtrak in providing funds to complete final design and construct railroad tracking signal upgrades to allow for the addition of new passenger train service between the cities, Red Wing, Winona, and Wisconsin points to Chicago. The $53 million project cost has already secured a $31.8 million grant from the U.S. Federal Railroad Administration. Wisconsin has pledged $6.5 million, and Amtrak, we're pledging $5 million. All that the project is waiting on to complete is a $10 million contribution from Minnesota. The so-called TCMC, or second train project, will capitalize on the once daily passenger train that already connects these communities to begin to jumpstart more economic activity along the route with the convenience of more daily trains. The capital projects to be funded include additional mainline and bridge track work, new and improved switches, and upgraded control signals. $40 million of the $53 million project cost will take place in Minnesota, in Winona, La Crescent, and St. Paul. These track improvements will be used by Amtrak trains only four times each 24-hour period, the remainder of each day. The additional track capacity will be made available by the owning freight railroad to provide their critical service to industrial customers, increasing capacity and reducing road crossing blockages by almost 10%. Amtrak has been in communication with business and elected leaders in the communities along the route in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Illinois. The excitement in these communities, large and small, has been palpable. In Red Wing, Winona, and the city's civic leaders have shared how additional train service increases mobility for their residents, improves access for business travel, personal and university travel, and tourism, and supports downtown-centric commercial and residential development. These communities know what we at Amtrak have seen elsewhere in our network. Frequent passenger train service drives ridership and charges local economies in the places served. Again, we're pleased to partner with our contribution to this project and hope Minnesota will join us. Wisconsin, and the federal government to get these trains running by 2024. And with that, I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. James. Next up, we have Dorian Greeley. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee, members of the committee, my name is Dorian Greeley. I'm with the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota. Thank you for including $8 million for safe routes to school infrastructure in House File 337. I've asked that the safe routes map be included in your packets to show that in one way or another, the safe routes program touches every corner of Minnesota. The handout also states that MnDOT has allocated nearly $40 million to the program since 2006. But as you can infer from the map and heard when MnDOT and community advocates testified at the previous hearing, demand for these funds continues to increase. So I'm happy to see the $8 million number. There are hundreds of safe routes to school plans waiting to be implemented throughout the state. Some are simple, like a stretch of sidewalk or a crossing signal. Some are more complex and expensive, like bridges or underpasses spanning major roads. You've gotten letters with heartfelt messages from small towns about how a modest project had made a huge difference in safety and accessibility. You've also heard from supporters in larger communities and the urban core. They all have a lot more to do. You have my word that the Bicycle Alliance, MnDOT, and their Safe Routes Advisory Committee, and our public health and community partners will be there to ensure these funds are well spent, helping ensure that our kids, schools, and communities thrive. The supporters of the Bicycle Alliance of Minnesota from throughout the state, thank you for your support of Safe Routes to School.
Thank you, Mr. Greeley. And next up, we have Elizabeth Wayfield. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and members of the Capital Investment Committee. My name is Elizabeth Wayfield, and I am testifying on behalf of the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. We appreciate all the time and energy that you have put into assembling a bonding bill this year. As Minnesota moves forward from the pandemic, we support passage of a large bill to address our critical infrastructure needs to create jobs and to stimulate our economy, which is why it is difficult for us to express our disappointment with this proposal. But the failure to more directly target the specific needs of Greater Minnesota make it challenging for us to support this bill. We are most disappointed with the failure to invest more in the clean water programs of the Public Facilities Authority. We support putting at least $100 million into the PFA programs this year to keep up with ongoing needs. Failing to put any money into the Point Source Implementation Grant Program means that cities across the state, including cities in the metro, cannot move forward with projects to remove mercury, chloride, phosphorus, and other pollutants. We are also disappointed that there is little in the way of targeted economic development, particularly the BDPI program, which has a 20-year record of success in promoting economic development in Greater Minnesota, which is all the more critical as our communities and businesses try to recover from the economic hardships caused by the pandemic. Finally, the House continues to ignore the needs of the parks and trails of Greater Minnesota. We do thank you, though, very much for including much needed funding for childcare, including $5 million for the Greater Minnesota Child Care Facilities Grants. This funding is an important step to combat the acute child care shortage in Greater Minnesota. We know that as this legislation progresses, there will be changes, and we would like to work with you to include more targeted relief for Greater Minnesota. And we refer you to our letter further detailing our concerns. Thank you again for all the work you've done on this legislation and for Minnesota.
Thank you, Ms. Wayfield. Next up, we have Mr. Berzelsen from the University of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Ranking Member Erdahl, and members of the committee. We'd like to thank you on behalf, thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon. And for the record, my name is Mike Berzelsen. I'm the Vice President for University Services at the University of Minnesota. To begin, thank you for the $32 million investment in HEPR included in this bonding bill. We are grateful for this allocation and for your support of the University of Minnesota. This funding will finance needed asset preservation projects across our campuses and our research and outreach centers. HEPR projects will target our most critical renewal needs, including fire life safety improvements, building code upgrades, roof replacements, elevator upgrades, and many more. We remain concerned, however, that the bill leaves us hundreds of millions of dollars short of our facility renewal need. Earlier this session, President Gabel described for you the urgent need to address the many existing facility condition deficiencies around our system. Of the 30 million square feet of our facility space we manage, near the 8 million square feet, is in poor or critical condition. We've added over $750 million in deferred renewal backlog just in the last decade, resulting in a current deferred renewal need of $4.9 billion over the next 10 years. Facility renewal is a recurring, consistent, and predictable problem, and one that continues to get worse with every year. The university cannot keep up with these costs without a significant, recurring, and reliable investment from the state. Our need is simply too great for us to manage internally, and we cannot place this full burden on our students. As a result, we continue to fall farther and farther behind. This may weaken the academic programs and experience we offer to our students and hinder our ability to serve the state with groundbreaking research and the most innovative services. We respectfully request that you consider increasing funding for asset preservation for the University of Minnesota and for all of higher education as this legislation moves through the process. Again, thank you, committee, for the investment in the University of Minnesota.
Thank you, Mr. Bertelson. Next up, we have Emma Nelson. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Chair Lee, Ranking Member Erdahl, and members, thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts on the House 2021 bonding bill. For the record, my name is Emma Nelson, and I am a student at the University of Minnesota Duluth. I grew up in Del Rapids, South Dakota, and I am a junior majoring in communication with a minor in marketing. After graduating, I hope to attend law school here in Minnesota. Thank you for the $32 million investment in HEPR included in the bonding bill. As a student, I know firsthand the importance of modernized classrooms and up-to-date research and teaching spaces. You can only imagine how difficult it is to succeed when the room you are learning in or doing research in is in poor shape, is too cold or too hot, and perhaps inaccessible. An example from my experience at UMD is the A.B. Anderson Building, which houses the communication department. This building is sometimes so warm that students have to plan multi-layered outfits in order to go from the bitter cold of Duluth to these unreasonably warm classrooms, sometimes transitioning to or from other classrooms around campus that are significantly cooler. Things like updating elevators, repairing roofs, or improving heating systems is typically not something most students think about when they are looking to select a college or in their day-to-day lives on campus, but it's not something we can take for granted. Without investments by the state into these types of projects, the wear and tear continues to grow. And like most students, we don't want the university to look to tuition to fix these problems. We want to keep our tuition down with the focus of tuition dollars spent on things that enhance our student experience. So while students like me appreciate what you have included in this bill, we know it is not even close to what is needed to renew our campuses. And we are concerned the need is only going to grow over time. That is why I respectfully ask that you increase your investment in HEPR and the University of Minnesota as the legislative process moves forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Nelson. Next up, we have Pete Oba. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Lee and members of the committee, my name is Pete Aubie, and I'm chair of your Minnesota Forest Resources Council. Thank you for the opportunity to testify in support of investments in Minnesota forest tree nurseries and annual investments in reforestation in Minnesota. For 25 years, the council with its 16 members appointed by the governor from diverse stakeholder groups have been statutorily authorized and required to make recommendations to the governor and the legislature on sustainable forestry issues. Last fall, the council published its comprehensive report on climate change in Minnesota forests. And the two most important recommendations from that report is increasing the capacity of Minnesota's nurseries and increasing funding for reforestation. Not only is reforestation important for battling climate change, it is the most basic and fundamental form of responsible forest stewardship. The state of Minnesota is second only to Alaska with state-owned trust forest land acreage, and the legislature and the governor are trusts of that incredible land asset. So thank you for recognizing the importance of investment in this asset for all Minnesotans. Established in 1933, the Minnesota Forest State Forest Nursery grows seedlings for state, county, and private land managers for their annual reforestation programs. A capital investment is needed for renovations and improvements to enable the nursery to meet its statutory limit of 10 million seedlings per year. The cost of planting these seedlings require a recurring and dependable annual budget of about $5 million per year. This is a necessary and extremely worthwhile investment by Minnesota for Minnesotans in its magnificent forest land asset. And Chair Lee and the committee, thank you for the opportunity to comment in support and appreciation for your budget recommendations in Minnesota forestry.
Thank you, Mr. Obi. Now, members, I'd like to turn it over to Representative Murphy to chair for the remainder of the committee. Chair Murphy.
I have to get used to this. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Obi. The next person that's going to testify is Adam Dunick.
Thank you, Chair Murphy and members. My name is Adam Dunick. I'm the Director of Government Affairs, for the North Central States Regional Council of Carpenters. We represent over 12,000 members who are carpenters, floor coverers, lathers, millwrights, pile drivers, and industrial workers. I'm here today to speak in favor of House File 337 that will assist with the economic recovery in the coming months. To us, like last year's much-needed bonding bill, House File 337 is about good jobs. I want to make clear that the robust bill of projects allows men and women to build careers for the long run. Throughout the pandemic, our apprenticeship programs have continued to be nimble and effective in bringing young workers into the industry, helping to diversify the workforce, and put people on a career pathway to support themselves and their families. Our construction industry apprenticeship programs are held up as a model for training, professionalism, and safety. A vote for this bill is a vote for working people and in support of this successful business model. A vote for this bill is a vote for good jobs. Another policy that supports good jobs is prevailing wage, and we speak in strong support of prevailing wage language included in Article 2, Section 3, Subdivision 12. I want to take this opportunity to talk about the rampant underground economy that occurs in the construction industry. This is the opposite of that good business model I mentioned. And every day we see workers get paid cash off the books, we see workers trafficked and exploited, and we see wage theft, tax fraud, workers' compensation fraud, and other exploitative practices. And the best deterrent for this is to apply prevailing wage to projects that are state funded. This is the business model that costs taxpayers. It hurts workers and it puts legitimate businesses at a disadvantage when they bid on public projects. This same model misclassifies workers and cuts corners on safety. It fails to support the state-of-the-art best-in-class training programs. Prevailing wage policies are the best way to safeguard that public dollars are not being paid to companies who defraud the taxpayers of their money. It may be counterintuitive in these charged times, but prevailing wage enjoys a wide bipartisan support, both here in Minnesota and at the federal level. That's because when labor standards are lifted up, it is good for workers, fair for business, and good for the taxpayer. So once again, I ask you to support good jobs, to support strong labor standards, and to protect the skilled tradespeople who build our communities. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this afternoon, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dunick. We appreciate it. Ms. Shretha?
Hello. Thank you, Chair Murphy and committee members. My name is Sopnil Shrestha, and I work at the Minnesota Council of Nonprofits. I'm here today on behalf of the Racial Equity and Joy Coalition to express appreciation for the equity article in your omnibus bill. As you know, the dollars that fund the projects in the equity article have fewer requirements, fewer barriers, and can be funded more quickly. This is important for bonding-type projects for community-based organizations that are led by and serve Black, Indigenous, Latinx, Asian, Pacific Islander, and other communities of color. We appreciate your recognition of the barriers these organizations face to obtain traditional bonding dollars and your creative thinking to find an avenue to fund these important projects. The equity article is a great first step. As next steps, we ask members of this committee to support the Racial Equity Impact Notes Working Group in the state government omnibus bill. We also ask members to support operationalizing the use of Voices for Racial Justice's Racial Equity Impact Assessment Tool. This working group would support informed decision-making and investments that accelerate economic inclusion and growth through investments in areas like outreach and assistance to support community-based organizations that are led by people of color who have historically not been engaged in state bonding projects. The goal is that examining the bonding process through a lens of racial equity will lead to reforms in the process, thereby no longer needing an equity article or investment in outreach and assistance to specific communities. On behalf of the Racial Equity and Joy Coalition, thank you for the opportunity to engage with you in this conversation.
Thank you so much. Mr. Connery.
Hi, Chair Murphy, Chair Lee, and members of the committee. My name is Chris Connery. I'm the director of the 100% campaign. We're a coalition of over 50 organizations advancing equitable climate solutions in Minnesota. I'm here today to share our support for the House Capital Investment Bill, House File 337 as amended. First, we want to applaud the committee for its work to advance both climate preparedness and racial equity in our bonding decisions. We make Minnesota when we build. Our capital investment decisions can shape our communities for decades. It's particularly important now because we will have an opportunity this year and next to meet multiple bottom lines through bonding. We can create a sustained recovery that leaves us all better off than we were before COVID. We can make our state more equitable, better prepared for extreme weather events, and create family-supporting jobs in every corner of the state. Three provisions advance these goals directly. Adding climate resilience to our state's sustainable building guidelines is an important step forward. The committee heard about climate change trends and risks during three hearings in late January and early February. Though the trend line on extreme weather was clear and unsettling, the potential for solutions was both clear and hopeful. Building professionals are ready to design and build structures that are climate adapted. The bill also makes important investments in transit and transit bus electrification. This bill supports the Metro Transit transition to 100% electric buses by expanding charging infrastructure. The bill invests in both E-Line bus rapid transit and interstate passenger rail. These investments create more options for Minnesotans and better connect us as a state. Finally, the bill includes appropriation bonds to support areas impacted by civil unrest in 2020, incorporating buildings and job standards while prioritizing local residents and minority-owned small businesses. This is a great example of the ways we can support recoveries that make Minnesota more prosperous, more fair, and better prepared for the future. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Mr. Thorson.
Chair Murphy, members of the committee, thank you. My name is John Thorson with Lyuna, Minnesota, North Dakota. We're Minnesota's infrastructure union representing more than 12,000 skilled construction laborers who build and maintain the critical infrastructure necessary for Minnesota's economic prosperity. The COVID pandemic triggered an unusually sudden, historically deep, and as we now see, the most uneven economic downturn in modern history. It's resulted in large setbacks for workers and businesses in the construction industry, hitting communities of color in greater Minnesota especially hard. Recovery from economic hardship of this scale and severity is greatly aided by robust investments to help jumpstart our economy and get thousands of people back to work. I'm here to share our support for the projects outlined in the DE amendment to House File 337 and to call out some critical investments to roads and bridges, water infrastructure, and rebuilding Minneapolis and St. Paul following civil unrest. With roads and bridges, we support the $10 million for local road improvement grants and $30 million for the local bridge replacement program because we know Minnesota has more than 600 structurally deficient bridges and nearly 5,000 miles of highway in poor condition today. For water infrastructure, two key investments are the $15 million to the PFA water for wastewater and drinking water projects in greater Minnesota, and importantly, an equal amount of $15 million to inflow and infiltration mitigation for communities across the metro area, because we know that communities in every part of our state are burdened with aging water infrastructure. And then for communities affected by civil unrest, LIUNA supports $300 million in appropriation bonds to repair, rebuild, and revitalize Minneapolis and St. Paul businesses and neighborhoods, which saw decades of BIPOC and immigrant community investments destroyed last year during a single week of unrest. Because in Minnesota, we show up for one another when disaster strikes any community, whether it's flooding in Albert Lea, Duluth, or St. Peter, or tornadoes in North Minneapolis, Rogers, and or Wadena. It's what we do. It's who we are. And our leaders and government have a duty to help Minnesotans rebuild their lives and strengthen our communities after such events. These investments will put hundreds of local skilled construction workers employed by local contractors on the job. As Mr. Dunnick said, this is an excellent opportunity for BIPOC, new Americans, women, and veterans throughout the state to launch lifelong family supporting careers with the support of tuition-free Earn While You Learn registered union apprenticeships. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Ms. Suzanne Sabaka.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Suzanne Sabatka, and I am the Policy and Research Director at Move Minnesota. Move Minnesota is the leading transit and active transportation advocacy organization in Minnesota and is a leader of Transportation Forward, a coalition of organizations advocating to see greater investment in our transportation and transit infrastructure. I am here today with a resounding thank you for several mass transit-related provisions in the House bonding bill today. First, the $40 million investment in the E-Line Bus Rapid Transit Corridor shows your strong commitment to building out a robust, comprehensive transit system that's not only fair and just for all, but also gets the state of Minnesota closer to achieving its greenhouse gas reduction goals. Second, thank you for investing in $1 million in bus charging infrastructure. These funds will allow Metro Transit to deploy electric buses in the corridors where reductions in vehicle emissions could make the most significant impact in community health and support electrification across the transit system. And finally, thank you for the significant investment in passenger rail projects across the state. Notably, the funding for the second train to Chicago will provide a crucial connection from the Twin Cities to Southeast Minnesota and onto Wisconsin and Chicago. Investments in mass transit like this help the state achieve its preliminary goal of a 20% reduction in vehicle miles traveled by 2050 and encourages riders to use other multimodal means of transportation once they arrive at their destinations. We look forward to continuing to support these provisions as discussion on a bonding package continues in the coming weeks. Thank you again for the opportunity to share our gratitude here with you today.
You're welcome. Thank you. Mr. Jeff Stolenwerk.
Chair Board
of Duluth.
Hi.
You brought sun.
We did, yes. My name is Jeff Stolenwerk. I'm the Director of Government and Environmental Affairs at the Duluth Seaway Port Authority. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Duluth Port, as well as the other ports that are members of the Minnesota Ports Association. St. Paul, Red Wing, and Winona are the three river ports that join us in the MPA. We formed the association almost 30 years ago to work with the legislature and MnDOT to identify infrastructure needs and secure funding for port projects. We appreciate the partnership that has evolved and the state support that we have received over the years. All four of our ports have made significant improvements with matching grants from the Port Development Assistance Program. The projects we completed have enhanced our ability to serve customers who rely on our waterways for efficient and low-cost transportation of bulk commodities to national and international markets. With each investment we make, we improve the competitive position of several Minnesota sectors of Minnesota's economy, while the activity relating to loading and unloading cargo takes place at our ports, the benefits are shared all across the state. Moving commodities by water produces less pollution, results in fewer worker injuries, provides greater fuel efficiency, and lower transportation costs. The ports greatly appreciate the funding we've received in the past, which has recently allowed Red Wing to establish a new bulkhead to serve a local customer and eliminate truck traffic through town. Winona can now manage more barge traffic and handle more products at the port as a result of PDAP projects to expand staging and fleeting areas and dock wall reconstruction. St. Paul completed a much needed dock wall projects. They built a heavy lift transfer pad and they're about to start construction on extending rail to this facility to create direct barge to rail transload capability at the Southport Terminal. And in Duluth, we reconstructed the former Garfield C&D dock, adding two new heavy lift berths and adding 26 acres of high quality outdoor laydown area. Chair Murphy and members of the committee, we are very grateful that you are including the Port Development Assistance Program in the bonding bill. We appreciate your time and attention to this matter, and we look forward to working in partnership with you to provide low-cost shipment of Minnesota commodities to national and international markets. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Trista Madis-Castillo.
Good afternoon, Chair Murphy. Thank you very much. I am Ramsey County Commissioner Trista Madis-Castillo. Thanks for the opportunity to be here with you today and offer our strong support for the House bonding bill. We understand that this isn't a traditional bonding year, and we look forward to an even bigger bonding bill next year with even more regional projects, as I'm sure most of you do too. First, I want to applaud the way that you've run this committee this year and this bill with a focus on equity and climate, especially on the equity front. Ramsey County shares your values here. We often hear that a budget document is a moral document, and there is no better way to demonstrate it than through the investments in this bonding bill. On the housing front, we strongly support the investment in housing infrastructure bonds included in the bill. Minnesota's housing crisis has reached dangerous levels, and Ramsey County feels the brunt of that work. And I don't need to remind you, it has been further exacerbated by the pandemic. Additionally, we fully support the $50 million in housing infrastructure bonds dedicated for shelter facilities to develop much needed emergency shelters. While we recognize emergency shelter beds are short-term solutions for individuals and families sleeping outside, they're the starting point to gaining long-term stability. We're glad to see the funding for food shelf facilities here. Keystone is an important community partner for Ramsey County residents who are food insecure. And thank you for including business redevelopment bonds, which are critical to the success of our small businesses and our economic competitiveness in the region. Thanks for including Metro Parks in the bonding. Now more than ever, parks have become a healthy extension to our living spaces and are critical for all of us. Lastly, I want to share that I'm the Ramsey County representative serving on the Great River Rail Commission. We're happy to see the $25 million to MnDOT for passenger rail. We hope this means the full $10 million for the Twin Cities Milwaukee-Chicago second train. Thank you for seeing this as an equity investment and the environmental safety and economic development benefits it provides. This is truly a regional investment, and I'll tell you one more time. Minnesota is the last partner to match the federal and Wisconsin funding, and we don't want our partners' funding put at risk, especially when so many people have spent so much time putting in the effort. Thank you again for a great bill. We here at Ramsey County are with you as the bill moves through the process and are fully supportive.
Thank you so much. Ms. Nash, are there any other signees?
There are not. We have finished with testimony.
Okay, will you please tell us what is in the future for this committee? When are we meeting again and at what time?
Our next meeting is Friday, that's April 16th at our regular normal early time, 8:30 a.m. And that will be the day we do markup and vote on House File 337. That's the amendment and the omnibus bonding bill. And we will also be voting on House File 506. So amendments are due tomorrow by 8:30 a.m. And they should be emailed to me. And that's what we've got left on our agenda.
So if anyone has amendments that they want to put on the DE, whatever number, three, is it three?
337, House File 337. The amendment is coded. Chelsea's got the code for the amendment.
Ms. Griffin?
Madam Chair and members, the code for the amendment is A21-0158.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other business to come before us today? If not, this meeting is adjourned.